You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Later this hour, we reconvene the triple play. We've done our grieving over the Dodgers. It's now time to look at the opening of the World Series tonight. So Nick Roman, A. Martinez will be joining yours truly. We'll talk about the World Series. But right now, we focus on the complexities of healthcare. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democratic presidential candidate, was pressed at the most recent debate by both moderators and other candidates on how she planned to pay for her Medicare for All plan.
The way I see this, it is about what kinds of costs middle-class families are going to face. So let me be clear on this. Costs will go up for the wealthy, they will go up for big corporations, and for middle-class families, they will go down. I will not sign a bill into law that does not lower costs for middle-class families.
The senator has said she is soon to release a plan that describes how she would fund her Medicare for All plan. With us to talk about how this is factoring into the senator's campaign is Bloomberg reporter who's covering Elizabeth Warren. In fact, she's in Waterloo, Iowa, where the senator is getting set to make an appearance. We're joined by Ms. Elena Egolfopoulou. Thank you very much for joining us. Share with us how this has been playing out on the campaign trail among the senator's supporters.
Hi. So great to join you here from Iowa. Like you mentioned, this was a question that Senator Warren was asked during the debate. But this wasn't the first time she's been asked this question. I've been with her on the campaign trail for the past few months, and we've constantly been asking her what she's going to do about affording a universal health care plan. And the answer to that is her campaign has not yet figured out how to pay for it. So we're seeing a candidate that's basically come out with a pay for every other plan that she's put forth. But for the most important plan, which is Medicare for All, she hasn't necessarily come out and said, this is exactly how I'm going to pay for it. Now, when we talk to Senator Warren about it, she says that there are several different revenue streams from which Medicare for All can be funded, and the cost of it could vary by trillions. And so she's saying her campaign has been working on figuring out the details for this plan for months now. And you heard it in the voice recording from the debate earlier that you played. She's vowing that middle-class families won't be paying more under Medicare for All, and the wealthy and the rich corporations are going to be the ones to be carrying the weight of the cost. But what's interesting here is the fact that she's already enforcing a wealth tax, which is supposed to raise some $2.7 trillion over the course of 10 years. And with that tax, she's somewhat exhausted some of the pressure she can put on costs on the wealthy and the corporations, which is what basically raises this question of, what other revenue streams are there available for her to pay for this very, very expensive plan? Some estimates say it might cost about $30 trillion over the course of 10 years. And so this is a question that's been asked of her multiple times. And finally, this week, it was actually on Monday, we were in Iowa, and she announced that in the coming weeks, she'll be releasing a plan with the cost of her Medicare for All plan and the revenue streams for which she's going to be able to fund it.
Ms. Elena, what have her campaign officials been saying about the reason they haven't released it? Is it just simply politically they don't want it to be a target to be picked apart? Or is it that they're really having trouble figuring out how to describe this in a way that's going to be saleable?
That's a great question. I mean, look, I think what's really important to note is that even Bernie Sanders, who sort of gave birth to this entire notion of Medicare for All, he introduced this bill in 2017. And when he did that, he did not attach a sort of pay for that bill. The Bernie Sanders campaign actually came out in September So about a month ago, with their plan of how they were going to fund Medicare for All, sort of using partially a wealth tax to raise the money needed to cover everyone with universal health care. And so it isn't necessarily out of character not to have released exactly how you're going to pay for this plan. And but for the Warren campaign, it's somewhat different because she set herself really high standards when it comes to how she's going to finance every single other one of her plans. And so her supporters expected the sort of same response to the Medicare for All plan. Her campaign is saying that it's a very complicated plan and that there are several revenue streams from which it can come from and that there are trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in sort of difference in cost that they can come up with. And so they're saying they're talking to people, to economists, to healthcare experts, to come up with a plan that they have promised will not raise the cost for middle-class families. And just to add something to this, I was speaking to Emmanuel Saez, the UC Berkeley economist who came up with, who helped Senator Warren develop her wealth tax just a week ago on this issue. And what he told us was that, you know, her promise isn't necessarily far off. If there are no healthcare premiums from private health insurance, which Senator Warren has vowed she will abolish, that could mean that middle class families, will be paying lower costs. But Senator Warren will not be using the word tax at all to sort of describe the cost of healthcare. And that's something that we're going to be looking at because she's promising not to use that word. And so, you know, we're wondering how long she can sort of keep that up for.
All right. Ms. Elena, thank you so much for reporting for us from the campaign trail where you're in Waterloo, Iowa, where Senator Warren is going to be speaking to her supporters very shortly. We appreciate your joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Ms. Elena Egolfopoulou of Bloomberg News. Also joining us from the University of Pennsylvania School of Law, Professor Allison Hoffman. She's a senior fellow at the Leonard Davis Institute of Health Economics at Penn. She's also co-editor of the Oxford Handbook of U.S. Health Law. Professor Hoffman, we appreciate your being with us. And I know that you're strongly in support of this. You believe that it would close a lot of the holes that exist in the American healthcare system currently under private insurance. What do you see as the potential areas where revenue could be raised to pay for this?
So that just to start off, when you think about what Elizabeth Warren has been doing so far, she's laid out her vision. And you know, that's not an unreasonable place to start. And that vision includes both what she wants to do, which is universal coverage and coverage that's quite comprehensive. If she's piggybacking on Bernie's plan, way more comprehensive than what Americans have today. And then she's also said, I'm going to finance it without increasing taxes for middle class Americans. And so that gives us some guidelines on what she wants to do. And then there are the details. So once you decide what's covered, what the benefits are, how to finance it is in some ways an accounting question. So if you look at the estimates of how much it will cost, the estimates tell us about 10 years from now, our total spending on healthcare as a country will be about the same with more people and more services covered. What will be different is that the way to finance it will come solely from the federal government, whereas today we use many different sources. We use things like taxes and employers pay for part of it. And so if you could take all the dollars we pay today through all of these sources and put them in a federal pool of money, it would almost it would either pay completely for the total spending or would almost pay for the total spending. But the hard part is that accounting problem. How do you get the dollars into the
And figuring out who pays more and who pays less, because you know, one of the points that she's raised is that this would be a benefit to the middle class insured person. But the problem is that, you know, she identifies the problem where there's this small percentage of people that get socked with these massive health care bills that in some cases are major contributors in bankruptcy filings. You're trying to figure out, well, how do you deal with those very high costs that people are bearing? But if you put that on to essentially middle class people who are generally healthy, not paying those bills, how do you do that in a way that their taxes don't appreciably increase?
Right. So that's the hard part. So right now, an average family of four spends about $28,000 a year on health care. And some of that they spend because they pay for premiums every month and they pay for health care every time they go to the doctor. And some of that they spend because their employers are paying money for their health insurance that they're not paying in salary dollars. And so when Elizabeth Warren talks about the research that she's done on bankruptcy and how American households are struggling under these costs, she's talking about the slice of that, the piece of that, which is, I think, about $8,000 a year on average for the average non-elderly family that they have to deal with out of pocket. But the total cost to American families today is much larger than that. And so the question is, if we shift the way we pay for health care, it's a chance to redefine, you know, who pays. And so she may see this new policy as a way to make financing health care less regressive, so higher earners might pay more and lower earners would pay less.
We're talking with University of Pennsylvania Professor of Law Allison Hoffman. Coming up, we'll talk with Joe Antos, who's a health policy expert and economist with the American Enterprise Institute. We'll continue the conversation. It's Air Talk on KPCC. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. One of the triplets just entered the house. Nick Roman is here to talk baseball for the World Series. A. Martinez will be coming in with headphones dangling. Always, A has just finished with an interview for Take Two. He'll be joining us shortly. We'll preview the World Series coming up. But right now, we are attempting to preview the potential ways of paying for Elizabeth Warren's Medicare for All plan. Her team says that she'll have that the full proposal with the funding mechanism out shortly. We've been talking with Penn's Allison Hoffman, where she's a law professor, as well as senior fellow at the Institute of Health Economics at Penn. Also with us from the American Enterprise Institute, health policy expert and health economist, Joe Antos. Joe, it's good to have you with us again on Air Talk. So let's look at the potential ways of funding this. One of them that's talked about is a payroll tax. How would that work?
Thanks, Larry. if we leave aside the possibility that health reform proposal could actually improve the efficiency of the health system, if we just focus on financing the system that we have, or an expanded system that's likely to be more inefficient, then payroll taxes are definitely the way to go. The reason is pretty straightforward. If you're trying to do a wealth tax, people imagine that we would be taxing wealth of wealthy people, but a lot of that wealth is actually contained in pension plans that, in fact, middle-class people depend on when they retire. Taxing wealth is really, really a bad idea. There's also the problem of valuation. Wealthy people often have assets that are very hard to evaluate. What is the worth of a piece of art? You don't know until you've sold it. With income taxes, you have transactions. You know exactly where the money is going. You know exactly who is receiving the money. You can set your – we already have a system for income taxation. You can adjust marginal tax rates, however you want to do that. But in the end, we're talking about so much money that needs to be collected through some form of taxation that the middle class will not be able to escape.
And just real briefly, I know this is kind of a bigger theoretical issue, but if taxes are significantly increased on wealthier Americans, how does that hurt middle class Americans' 401ks?
Well, the issue has to do with where does the money come from when you retire and you have your money in investments, typically stocks or in some cases bonds. The basic problem is that if you put a tax on wealth, not wealthy people, but wealth, then the however the accounting value of whatever the accounting value of your wealth in that pension plan will also be taxed. Now, if you excluded that, then you don't truly have a wealth tax. You have a tax that is supposed to be aimed at rich people. Somehow you're going to distinguish between rich people and middle-class people who hold assets for retirement that could be quite considerable. It's very difficult to figure all of that out. But if you tax, if you try to only tax high-income people through income taxes, that's going to drive them away from the kind of investments that might propel the economy, that might discourage economic growth. These are people who are sophisticated. They can hide their money.
Okay. Let's move on because we have limited time, Joe. So Bernie Sanders has proposed a 7.5% payroll tax on employers that would fund his plan. He estimates that would raise nearly $4 trillion for a decade of a payroll tax like that. What, from your view, is the problem with that proposal?
Well, there's a real distributional problem. The lowest paid worker is going to pay a part of that tax just as much as the highest paid worker. And since all of the Democratic plans are really oriented towards redistributing income or wealth to lower income workers, if you simply apply a percentage tax on all employers, you're going to hit small employers with low wage workers, where that tax can really have an impact on employment and on wage growth. You're going to be hitting very large employers where that tax might not be so significant, but there's still going to be potentially a wage and employment effect. Taxes are inherently discourage economic growth. They discourage wage growth. They discourage employment growth.
Let me go back to Professor Allison Hoffman of Penn. One of the things that Senator Warren is proposing is that all services, medical services, would be fully covered under this plan. How would this be dealt with economically, with expected increases in usage? Because if people don't feel, the use of their health care coverage, how do you deal with the likelihood that total costs will rise per capita?
Well, things are going to be covered now that aren't. So things like, dental and vision and other things that are covered now aren't. But the estimates that I mentioned earlier that say that the total spending per year is going to be about the same or less than it is now includes those services and includes the assumption that people are going to use those services. So, as we're trying to predict estimates, it's based on the thought that people will have health insurance that they need and that they'll actually use it to get things that they need. And I wanted to make one point on the question of on taxing employers for part of this is that, Bernie's proposal is defined in a way that employers will actually pay less than they do today. So employers are already spending a large amount of money on healthcare benefits for their employees. And then the question going forward is if they're not doing that directly, should some of that money be recouped to pay for a Medicare for All plan? And I totally agree with what Joe Anto said, is that it could end up being a plan that taxes, the higher earning employee the same as the lower earning employee, depending on how the employer handles it. But what we're asking employers to do is actually less under Bernie's plan. That's what he's asking them to do, is less than what they do and what kind of today's system requires of them.
Professor, wouldn't there, though, be pressure put on employers to increase compensation because now people get health care typically as part of their package of compensation? So if they're not getting that from the employer, wouldn't there be pressures put on employers to increase wages?
Yes, and arguably they should. So if they're spending less in a future Medicare for All plan per employee on healthcare, then arguably it would be fair to ask them to take those additional compensation dollars and translate them into wages.
But you think that would be net neutral, that they'd end up essentially, employers would end up essentially back where they are now with providing healthcare?
Right. So that makes sense conceptually, right, is to ask them to at least be net neutral. Whether they actually do that is a much more complicated question that Larry Summers and others have studied. And it depends really on who the employer is, who the employees are, and who has the bargaining power between the two, among other kinds of complicated dynamics there.
Joe Antos, just real briefly, so do you think that it's possible employers could end up with it being a neutral expenditure for them?
It seems pretty unlikely. I don't think Congress will ever pass a law that directs employers with regard to how they spend some savings from their internal operations. Net neutral, I don't think so. Certainly not net neutral with regard to their employees. But one thing that we've left out here, and that is, how will doctors, hospitals, and other providers feel about moving from a system where much of their income is paid at a substantially higher rate than the government pays through Medicare? There's some redistribution going on there as well, and that redistribution can have a serious impact on access to services and outlook for innovation.
Well, we've already got a problem here in Southern California having enough primary care docs because of, in part at least, because of those reimbursements. So the reimbursements to doctors, though, wouldn't that have to go up, Professor Hoffman, for that very reason, because you wouldn't have higher reimbursements from private insurance to help, lessen the burden of people seeing Medicare patients?
So, and I mean, that's a hard question, is exactly what would you need to pay to get enough doctors and enough, hospitals to do business in a new world. But one thing that we do know is that the U.S. is an outlier on what it spends on healthcare, and we're an outlier more because we pay more for every doctor's visit, every, prescription drug, every service than any of our peer nations do, twice as much on average than they do. And so if you're thinking about, bringing us into line with our peer nations, it would demand paying less for some services. Now, that doesn't mean that primary care doctors should be paid more for the visits that they're having with every one of their patients across California. But it does mean that you'd have to think hard about places where we're paying more for items and services than we should be. I mean, some of those areas have been in the news a lot lately, like what we pay for prescription drugs and what we pay for some kind of technology. And so that would require scrutiny to think about the spaces where you can save money through reimbursement without the supply of doctors.
I want to thank you both very much. That's Professor Allison Hoffman, University of Pennsylvania School of Law, senior fellow at the Davis Institute of Health Economics at Penn, and co-editor of the Oxford Handbook of U.S. Health Law. My thanks to Joe Antos at the American Enterprise Institute as well.